Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, discussing all things Star Wars animation. And we are here tonight to talk about Season 4 of The Clone Wars, Episode 6, Nomad Droids. And joining me tonight is Nathan P. Butler.
Hey guys, coming to you on or right about the 14th anniversary of the Star Wars Timeline Gold. Be sure to check it out. We're all excited that we've hit that benchmark anniversary here. And by we, I mean, of course, you know, me.
Also back again is Jerry.
Hey guys, it's Jerry. How's it going?
And while Jen is out gallivanting at New York Comic Con, filling in for her is Barrett.
Hey, all the swanlings out there. It's Barrett, Master Collect 'em All, your Swan Holocron Enhancer, and I'm glad to be back. And congratulations, Nathan. Congratulations on your 14th anniversary, my friend.
Thank you very much.
All right, and we are here to discuss Nomad Droids, which started off with the fabulous moral or fortune cookie, who's the more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him? Which, for those of you keeping score at home, would be a direct quote from Obi-Wan Kenobi in A New Hope. So now we're not going to get just the casual dropping of original trilogy lines. Now they're points of reference for your moral compass in these episodes. So I can't wait for the one that is, well, I don't know, maybe Han Solo from Empire Strikes Back, I'll see you in hell, or,
I want to see you do that and then spell out the, yeah, afterwards, right?
No, maybe that'll be the fortune cookie for the very final episode.
Final episode, there you go. Well, you know, we got 72 episodes in. This is episode 72, not counting the four that made up the movie. This is the first time we've actually had a fortune cookie directly taken from the films. It's like they're not even trying anymore, which most of this episode attests, but we'll get to that. And I find it interesting because so far they've sort of glanced on some actual just regular real life sayings, like failure to plan is a plan for failure. They've touched on things that sounded like Harry Potter, right? You know, what is right is not always easy or whatever. And they've even directly lifted from Murphy's Law, right? About everything that can go wrong will go wrong. But I think this is the first time, and I went back and actually tried to flip through some episodes just to be sure. I do believe this is the first time, 72 episodes in, that now we have a direct lifting of a quote from the films as an opening fortune cookie. And I'm not really entirely sure what to make of that.
You know, it's kind of like real life fortune cookies. Have you gotten any recently and you open it up and it just says, you know, you're a great and loyal friend. And you're like, well, that's not really a fortune. I mean, I'm looking for a fortune. I want something that's going to, like, you know, say you will find prosperity in your relationships untapped. And it's just, you know, something that's like a fortune. But now they don't even try on the cookies anymore. So it's just inevitable that these would become worthless, too.
You know, I got to say, Rockstar, that I liked the fortune cookie. I mean, if you're going to have a fortune cookie or, you know, a saying before each of these episodes, you know, why not bring it from some of the movies, you know? And I think it's better that they do bring it from some of the movies, like the wisdom of Obi-Wan Kenobi, than just some random kind of amalgam of something you think you may have heard before, you know? So I kind of liked it.
Well, see, here's the problem, though. I don't see where this one applies, though, because R2 and 3PO just got thrown into some bad situations. Neither of them were really, like, trying to follow the other. Neither of them were, you know, it's not like C-3PO said, hey, let's head over this way because this would be a good planet to land on. No, everything was kind of by accident and by chance. So it's not like one was leading and the other one was like, well, I don't know if you're making the right decision, but I'll follow you anyway.
I totally agree with that on first viewing. I went back and rewatched this to take my notes for the episode, though, and it strikes me maybe, my first impression was the same thing. Maybe it's supposed to be C-3PO or R2-D2 leading the other. How does that work? But if you think about it, these primitive societies they wind up on both planets, they're basically following some kind of blowhard leader they shouldn't be following for one reason or another, and they're being fooled into it in some form or another. So it seems to me that it's more about basically saying, hey, all those primitives, they be stupid, y'all. And that's about it.
Yeah, that's where I was. I saw it as the fools following the fools were the primitives, which really isn't very nice to say. But that's the only way that you could actually take this, I think, unless you're saying that one of the two droids is the fool. But
yeah, see, if the fortune cookie's not actually in reference to the main characters of the show, then I do think that that's kind of a waste. I mean, if the fortune cookies to the primitive creatures on the given planets, you know, they're not what the show's about. So I think that would be a disappointing way for that fortune cookie to mean something to the show. But whatever. I mean, we can move past the fortune cookie, I guess.
Yes, let's move past the fortune cookie. There's a whole lot of fun to be had on this episode. Let's jump into it. But before we go through the individual points, I think it's important that we draw the line here and see where everybody falls. What were everyone's thoughts on this episode? Overall, not specific points. We'll get into those. I'm sure we will. And let's start with our rookie for droids action, Barrett.
Oh, goody. I'm first. Well, my overall impression of this episode was, you know, when any time that there's R2, D2, and C-3PO, you know, I call them the dynamic duo. You know, you're in for a treat. I mean, you know, C-3PO is always the comedy relief. You know, he's always the very hesitant hero, you know, who really doesn't want to get into any trouble, but ends up coming out on top at the end. And he looked great. He sounded great. I mean, they nailed all of his lines. Anthony Daniels nailed all of his lines, I thought. He was just as funny here as in any original trilogy movie. Everything looked great. I was kind of expecting there to be some sort of concrete plot of what was going on, you know, and I kind of got a little confused when they went from one planet to another without really doing anything. I mean, it was just nothing I expected from, you know, a Clone Wars episode, especially something that was named Battle Lines. You know, you kind of thinking of the war of the clones, you know, of something that would impact this universe. And, you know, we didn't get that. And that's okay. Does it make for a very entertaining show for me? I wouldn't say yes.
All right. And to keep the opinions alternating, I think we'll go with Jerry next.
Okay. Overall, I got to say, I actually enjoyed this episode. I actually watched it about three times. Not because I loved it so much, I just couldn't get enough, but because first time I watched it, I was a little distracted, so I wanted to sit down and watch it again. And then even the second viewing, something was kind of going on around the house, so I had to like kind of stop it and go do it. And then when I came back to it, I said, you know what, let me just watch from the beginning, because I want to see it in its entirety, beginning to end, not choppy. But I have to admit, the one thing that I really enjoyed about this episode was, number one, it does fail my one test of saying that, hey, I want the episodes of the Clone Wars to be relevant to the Star Wars plot. Like I said last week, the Clone Wars series is supposed to be bridging the gap between episodes 2 and 3. So you kind of just want it to do that. However, if it's not going to, let's have it be a little fun. And I felt like this show captured very well some of the Star Wars humor that we like. Not the Gungan funny faces and the sticking the tongue out or stepping in poo or having a EOP fart in your face, but just some of the unintentional humor within the characters. Like R2 and 3PO, I thought just did some hilarious things. things that obviously they weren't trying to be funny. They weren't being slapsticky, but just the things, like in real life, sometimes the funniest things in real life are the things that no one meant to do, but everyone gets a blast out of it. There's one thing in particular that made me laugh out loud that I thought was just classic and priceless in this show. And now, you know, we could maybe you guys already figured it out, but we can go into details later. So I like that. I thought the interaction between R2 and 3PO was genuine. I thought it really captured well kind of what we saw in Droids, the kind of at each other's throat, maybe 3PO being overly critical about this, overly critical about that. But at the end of the day, the two have a strong brotherly relationship and care for one another, if you could, you know, imagine that out of Droids. So it's almost as if, you know, I respect this episode as being kind of the true homage to the Droid show. It was like everything I liked about Droids, but in a concise little episode that I'm not upset they went here. I think this show was well superior to the show we saw last week. And quite frankly, I thought it was fun. I had no problems with this show whatsoever. That being said, I don't, you know, if they gave me 5 or 6 more episodes in a row like this, it would get old really quickly.
All righty, Nathan P.
Okay, well, my opinion, I guess, couldn't be further from Jerry's if we tried this time. Okay, so we're in a season called Battle Lines. There's not really much to argue on the point that, of course, this doesn't fit the idea of Battle Lines. But we're only about 27% into the season, assuming it's going to be 22 episodes. Granted, 50% of the episodes so far have had very little to do with an actual major battle, like, say, what we saw in the first 3 episodes, or maybe a little bit more than that if you count the 4th one. So, yeah, it doesn't really fit Battle Lines, but we've seen seasons before where it's not like that. So we can pick it apart that it's not Battle Lines, but at the same time, at least recognize that, of course, in the past, not every episode has fit that theme, as has sort of become the running gag, so to speak. And let me say up front, I think this series has gotten better over time for the most part. I've really enjoyed quite a bit of it. A lot of the action sequences have been great. We got some new insight into some of the characters. I think that while this series has been relatively bad for continuity, it's been good for Star Wars overall. It's been fun overall, and it's been something that, for the most part, I think has gotten younger people back into Star Wars in a way that even the prequel films did not do. However, focusing on just this specific episode, understand that the way that I watch television is essentially like an all-or-nothing thing. I am a completist, if that hasn't become readily apparent at this point. I will watch a show for a little bit, let it get to a certain point, and if it is no longer entertaining me, or if it's putting out episodes that are just plain bad, I'll stop watching. Sometimes it's a good decision, sometimes not. I gave up on something like, say, The Event. I do not regret giving up on The Event. I gave up on the early revitalized Doctor Who series, regret it now because now I've gone back and watched the whole thing. But now that I'm into it, I'm trying to watch everything. All the modern seasons, all the spinoffs, and now I'm going back to the 60s on towards the 80s, watching everything I can get my hands on. I am a completist in that sense. And recently there have been series I've gotten interested in that I've simply given up on, particularly animated ones. G.I. Joe Renegades got to a point where it felt like nothing was happening. Renegades is off my list, deleted from the DVR. Same thing with Thundercats. When they got to the Lord of the Rings-esque we're walking storylines, I just gave up on it. This episode of The Clone Wars, while technically very nice looking, especially the battle in the atmosphere, technically it's on par with the rest of the seasons that we've seen maybe this season and last. But if this were any other series, any other franchise, anything that I either wasn't invested in like I am into Star Wars, or that I wasn't doing a fan production like the Star Wars Timeline Gold about, this episode was so awful, I would have literally stopped watching the series as of this. This is what I refer to as a series killer when it comes to my way of looking at watching anything. I was literally, after watching this episode, sitting there grinding my teeth. Usually with the Star Wars The Clone Wars episode, I'm watching it, and when I watch the clock, it's, oh, I hope some more cool stuff gets to happen before the end, because I know that I only have about 20 minutes, give or take, once the commercials are taken out of this half an hour. I'm really excited to see what's coming. And when it ends, I'm like, ah, now I gotta wait at least another week for more Star Wars, or in this case, 2 weeks for more Star Wars on television. This time, as of 5 minutes in, give or take, I was looking at the clock saying, please, please, let it end, make it stop. This episode, from a story standpoint, it was god-awful. It has beaten Ghosts of Mortis as my most hated episode of this whole series, and I really enjoyed the series as a whole. But at least Ghosts of Mortis tried to do something cool. They just wound up contradicting their own rules from time to time and made that last segment not make a lot of sense. And of course, it contradicted some of the stuff that Lucas has said about the Chosen One over the years. But at least it looked like they were trying to do something cool. This episode, it looks like they weren't even trying. We got a fortune cookie that's out of the films, which granted may fit a side plot, but certainly doesn't fit the overall episode. So they're just grabbing from the films now. Some of the voice actors in this seem like they weren't even trying. Of course, Anthony Daniels, always great as C-3PO, but some seem like they weren't even trying. And it was like, let's just come up with some oddball plot points. We don't know what episodes to put them in, so we're just going to throw them all together, mush them up, and hope that something comes out of it. It makes me wonder if, who's the most foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him, is a question about whatever happened in the writer's room to create this episode from a duo that had already given us evil plans that was actually pretty good. Something went wrong somewhere. If it wasn't Star Wars, I'd be done. Not that I have strong, passionate feelings about the series at all.
Tell us how you really feel, Nathan. Well, now I'm going to side with Jerry on this. So this will be an interesting discussion. I actually, and I'd like to apologize, first of all, for everyone who I turned off at the beginning of this series by saying, oh, there's this Gulliver's Travels episode looking. I was totally, totally wrong. I'm sorry. It was Wizard of Oz. Not that that makes it all that much better that we're still ripping off other people blatantly. But actually, despite all the horrid ripping off of other people's works, this wasn't that bad. I actually enjoyed it. Like Jerry said, this was more droidsy fun. It was a lot of fun the first two thirds for sure. It got wrapped up a little hastily, but all in all, it was fun. I don't suggest that they keep doing this, and I didn't see a preview for next week, but I've seen the title of it, and there's a lot of hype about this next story arc, so hopefully we'll get back into the whole, you know, Clone Wars thing that this show is supposed to be about, and I'm looking forward to that. But as far as sticking to the battle lines theory, even if we're going with battle lines means that the planet is divided and one side feels one way, one side feels another way, like we saw in the first arc, and we kind of saw in the second one, and really a stretch that the people above the surface and the people who they don't know below the surface are on a different side. But this one, I don't know where the battle lines is, and I welcome anybody to tell me where I'm missing where the battle line is on this one.
What was your clue that the last third felt rushed? Was it when they had the pirate basically say, blah, 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 instead of actually giving dialogue when he was talking, apparently just to fill the air with some kind of sound?
It started there, and it went from when a shot somewhere on the pirate ship, oh, they happened to be having these droid fights right against the outer hull, and magically they punched a hole in that. And oh, all of a sudden, hey, look, Adialia's there on the ship. And oh, all of a sudden they're rescued. That was like, holy crap.
I think I may have actually not despised the episode if it had been a two-parter. I mean, maybe they could have gotten more depth out of the trials and travails that they went through and maybe given us more of a rescue at the end.
But see, I think, you know, an episode like this needs to be contained in just one show, in the sense that, hey, this is kind of the goofy fun. Every show has this episode. But what I thought was really cool is how it all came back together, that they ended up pretty much where they started off, you know, with, you know, the ship with Adigalia. And, you know, it was obviously a result from the General Grievous attacking the ship that they got, you know, that they jettisoned from in the first place. So to me, that was kind of well done, in the sense that it was a no impact show, but it didn't take itself too seriously. Shows like last week, where it felt like it was trying to tell a really deep and meaningful story, but then it ended up being irrelevant. Here, the show knows it's irrelevant. They're not trying to break ground here. I mean, honestly, Nathan, it blows my mind that you would even compare this to the Mortis trilogy in terms of being like many levels worse than Mortis. At least they were trying. Trying is not okay. If you're going to try and then end up where the Mortis trilogy ended up, then you're better off not trying. Even if you weren't entertained with this week's episode, or if anyone wasn't entertained with this week's episode, at least you can agree that, okay, just a throwaway, goofy episode, let's move on to something serious for next week. But Mortis was three episodes that tried to quote-unquote explain the Force and was an epic failure. I mean, that will be the gold standard for kind of a cruddy storyline in Clone Wars for years to come.
See, I'm more looking at it in terms of the creative thrust behind a particular episode. I would hate to think that we have to come to a point at any point with any kind of Star Wars production, novels, comics, cartoons, whatever, where we would have to sit back and say, we're going to measure the quality of something by how little damage it does or by how little impact it has. I would like to think that an episode like this week's is going to be the ones considered, and we'll just toss that out, as opposed to things like the Mortis trilogy, where at least maybe someday they can give us some more explanation, probably a retcon or two, to make it all fit a little better, and then it becomes more of an epic, actually effective story in some form or another. I actually liked last week's better because it had one storyline, I guess is how I felt. I felt like this one was more of a pinball machine. Let's bounce the characters around from place to place, and none of the scenarios, I don't know if it's that they just didn't have time to give it depth or what, but just, it just seemed like every scenario we were thrown into was done in a rush, not in terms of storyline time within the episode, but it's almost like, hey, let's toss a concept out there. For example, if I'm going to pitch an idea for a comic or a novel or something like that, usually I have to pitch a synopsis first. And after I pitch that synopsis, then I get a yes or a no to that, and then you flesh it out into an actual script. It's almost like this time, here's the quick synopsis, okay, it's approved, and then it never got fleshed out. They just went with, here's the absolute bare bones version we got the thumbs up for, now we don't need to add any depth to it, not even to the characterization of the characters we're supposed to be caring about, maybe, on these planets. But yeah, we'll get into it. I feel like I'm going to be the one negative, and I've got plenty of notes here that include some positives. I just, from an overall standpoint, this episode really grated on me.
Battle lines are being drawn right here on this podcast because something is freezing over right now, because I am totally agreeing with Nathan, okay? I don't want, I do not want a throwaway Star Wars story. I'm sorry. I mean,
yeah, well, when Mustafar freezes over.
You know, Mustafar is freezing over. I am agreeing with Nathan wholeheartedly.
When I say a throwaway story, I don't mean that it's a throwaway in the sense that, oh, this is really garbage, but it wasn't offensive. It didn't affect continuity, so we'll just throw it away and pretend it didn't happen. I mean throwaway in the sense that it wasn't relevant to the overall story of Star Wars and the Clone Wars, but I thought it was still fun and entertaining. It was just throwaway in the sense that it's not a story anything else is going to hinge off of. So I didn't mean that to be a bad throwaway, more of just a, hey, for this week, watch a plain little show that's just going to be kind of funny and maybe even self-aware funny. And, you know, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a real show. But
however you meant it, Jerry, you were correct in your description. You know, and we do not want, I do not personally as a Star Wars fan and as a Clone Wars fan, do not want any throwaway stories. You know, leave that stuff for Scooby-Doo. You know, leave that stuff for any, you know, the Jetsons for throwaway stories. When it comes to, you know, Star Wars and the Clone Wars, you know, I want something that means something. And you hit it on the nail when you originally said in your original synopsis of the story is that this is supposed to be the bridge between episode 2 and 3. So we've kind of go into it expecting more. And it was on par, like, you know, like Nathan had said, with the visuals. And, you know, I couldn't agree more with you about how funny R2-D2 and C-3PO were. But, you know, it's as a fan, I'm expecting a little bit more. And maybe, you know, as a fan, I'm being a little bit too harsh on it. But I don't want any throwaway stories in this short time period that we're getting, in this storytelling that we're getting. You know, I want everything to be meaningful. So there you have it.
I was at least happy though that, you know, unlike last week was a throwaway, like in the trash, throw it away type story, because that didn't feel like it was taking place in the Clone Wars. That you could have replaced R2 and 3PO and Commander Wolf with his squad with any science fiction characters you wanted to, and told some story about, you know, underground species A and above ground species B. Who would have cared outside of a Star Wars context? I don't know. But here, I at least appreciate the fact they took R2 and 3PO and portrayed them, I think, more in their classical sense, let's say, of kind of the bantering, but at the same time having a good relationship. But I appreciate the fact that it started off on a Republic gunship with a battle, with Grievous coming in, you know, a slight lightsaber battle, some battle droids, some clones, and then that's also how it ended. So I at least appreciate the fact that the backdrop of the show was clearly in the Clone Wars. not relevant to the events of the Clone Wars that's leading us to episode 3. And like you just said, Barrett and Dan, would you echoed my thoughts earlier around, you know, if they were to do maybe another episode or two episodes more like this, it'd be like, okay, guys, it's getting old. I appreciate the one funny episode, but stop. Let's move on.
So we're on the cruiser with Adigalia, and the cyclone's coming. So they've got to all get to the storm shelter, but droids aren't allowed in the storm shelter. So they get in a Y-Wing. Sorry. I am going to ride this Wizard of Oz comparison all the way to the end when 3PO wakes up and says, and you were there. Oh, wait.
Does that make R2 falling on the little dude the house, I guess, or something like that?
R2-D2 is a combination between a house and Toto in this.
Wow. You are totally right.
He is. He really is. And follow me on this.
You know, the best part of the opening. It's going to be a fun ride. I have to say, the best part of the opening here is that there's a level, and Jerry makes a good point that this episode does not seem to take itself very seriously. It seems like they were playing it for laughs. For me, it was groans rather than laughs, but I can see how they were trying to get that feel for it, even more so than last week. But I think it's kind of nice that there's a little bit of self-referencing, let's try to explain to the audience type of thing, because even C-3PO refers to the events of last episode as absurd. Granted, he had no idea what was coming and whether or not it would be more or less absurd, but he makes a reference to that about how it was sort of different, you know, from what we would expect. So even there in the writing, you have that self-referential thing. You also have, and they don't really explain why the droids were with Wolf and with Adigalia, or I guess with Wolf initially in the first place, but Padme shows up saying she needs C-3PO back to supervise a banquet that's in 2 days. So we've got a recognition that, hey, she needs you. We just still don't have an explanation of why on Earth were R2 and C-3PO off with Wolf somewhere. But at least initially, it seems like they're trying to sort of give that nod to the audience, like, yeah, we know this is a little weird, but hang in there with us.
You know, my favorite part of that opening was when C-3PO and R2-D2 are making a run for it. And we've just seen Adigalia fighting with Grievous. And behind them in the hallway, you see Adi go flying. That was just kind of funny to me. That was almost laugh out loud. I know we shouldn't be laughing in a poor Jedi Master's pain as she's thrown across a room by General Grievous. But just seeing her fly by while they're looking for a place to go is just kind of funny.
Did you catch the A New Hope reference in there as they're running down? They refer to them having hit the main reactor. And then almost immediately thereafter, you get C-3PO giving the line, "Did you hear that?" Now, granted, he didn't say anything about shutting down the main reactor, but we had just heard a line that's very close to echoing what we had in A New Hope. So there's some clever bits in here and there. I especially like the Adigalia flying thing. That initial encounter was handled nicely.
It was very clever. I have to agree. It was very clever. And when she flies across the screen, you know, and then you realize that she's captured at the end, you know, that's how she got captured. She got knocked out, you know, and got taken prisoner. And then they give a few nods to A New Hope, you know, the main reactor thing, which I felt was kind of funny because all this time has passed and they're still not protecting the main reactor. Isn't that how they blew up the Death Star? Is the main reactor? And it's like the main reactor is the Achilles heel of the Empire, of the Republic as it is now. And then they were looking for an escape pod, you know, and I got the same opening sequence in episode 4 when, you know, all the blasters are flying past them and they're looking for an escape pod. So there were a few nods. It was very clever at the beginning.
Yeah, that whole opening sequence with them kind of stumbling through the firefight felt very much like A New Hope. That was very cool. But they get in their Y-Wing. I guess they stole a Y-Wing. Wow. A couple little criminals there. And they escape, fly through a major dogfight and are pursued by a vulture droid. And as Nathan brought out, some very stunning visuals as the dogfight in the atmosphere. That was very cool. And then that ship's reactor gets hit and they land on
the Y-Wing that's used. We haven't seen this much outside of the Clone Wars. It's based on, I guess, some early concept art here. And it's the BTLB Y-Wing. It's interesting because I don't know that we have ever seen, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. This is something, I'm not as big on the ships as I am on the storylines and such. But we've got a ship here, a Y-Wing, that can be flown by the astromech entirely. And apparently the droid can also run the turret without the pilot or without a gunner. So now it does make you kind of wonder why not have gunner droids instead of gunner clones or something, save on the clones, save on death and destruction, that sort of thing. But it's kind of cool to think that you could take this astromech slot and not just have the astromech be a companion to the pilot or an assistant to the pilot, but actually let the droid run the entire thing. I mean, it's not C-3PO piloting from the cockpit. It's R2 the entire time, including firing the weapons. Kind of makes you wonder if R2 instead of Anakin should be credited with the win at the Battle of Naboo, you know?
That is interesting. But this is something that Star Wars has played with before. The astromech can basically do everything if need be. There's a... which book is it? One of the X-Wing Squadron books. The astromech goes... The astromech is rigged to take over the pilot's ship, and it attempts to shoot down... Is it Corrin? Who is it tries to kill?
It's been so long, it's... I honestly
but
don't
you,
remember.
You know what I mean. I'm talking about.
This is a Lucas-driven, or at least presumably somewhat of a Lucas-driven show, and I'm not sure that Lucas has ever... I mean, aside from the actual droid starfighters and such, Lucas usually doesn't take that level of warfare out of the hands of human or even cloned human characters, at least on the Republic side. It usually assumes you need a human being behind the controls of your weaponry. War is a study in humanity, as opposed to being as mechanical and as sterile as what you see from the other side, whether it's the Confederacy or the Empire. So I found it interesting that in a Lucas-driven production, they would go that direction with it. Kind of opens up some cool new possibilities if they were to actually use that a little bit more later on.
So the droids crash land in Munchkin Land, and they meet the Munchkins, or Petites, and they are told that everything that happens to them will be decided by the leader of the Petites, who is referred to as Heizu. And once the two droids are tied, they get to meet Heizu, which once again... In true Star Wars fashion, the slightly bigger, fatter guy is the boss. So that way with the Gungans, it's that way with the Petites.
Is that way with the Hutts? Oh, wait, never mind. Did you notice, though, Heizu sounds a lot like they're trying to play on Jesus or Jesus.
Jesus,
and Petites are teeny tiny. They're petite. They're going a little bit obvious on the naming, but honestly, the little Tuckerisms and stuff like that, you know, I kind of would like to see more of just the funny naming. I mean, who are we to say that they can't be called Petites and be small or have this guy named Heizu?
Wow. I must be the only one who didn't get that, because I'm getting it now, and I'm thinking, that is very clever, the Petites. And, you know, the more we talk about, the more I'm appreciating this. But when they landed on Hakuna Matata, and I like the fact that the big boss, you know, Boss Hogg, you know, it's always Boss Hogg that's leading the people, you know, the dumber people, you know. It's like you can imagine him sitting back in his throne, you know, eating all of the rations and stuff, and people bringing him food and stuff like that. So I like that.
But in a slight reversal of the Wizard of Oz story, rather than land on the person who is oppressing the people at the beginning, once they're released, C-3PO accidentally pushes R2-D2 over onto Heizu, squishing him.
That was my laugh out moment. I mean, the sound that they made was, you know, it wasn't even like a, oh my God, is he all right? It's like, oh yeah, he's dead. I mean, that's the equivalent of like somebody, you know, knocking a barn over on you. I mean, as small as he is, as R2, big as R2 is, he didn't have a stand a chance. And we're getting ahead of ourselves, but the stain was on R2 the entire episode. Guys, this is funny. This is awesome.
I felt that was very shocking to me that they murdered this leader.
No, you know? Murder would imply intent. It was
they manslaughtered this leader.
It was Petite slaughter.
They manslaughtered this Petite. That was very shocking to me because I don't consider C-3PO and R2-D2 capable of killing for some reason for me.
They're not on purpose.
It wasn't the plan. He was trying to turn them off, and poor 3PO just doesn't know his own strength.
I completely understand that. It wasn't their intention to hurt this leader. But, you know, usually when you have a kid show, you know, if someone dies, it's because it's either for a purpose, they've sacrificed themselves for a greater good, or they've done something so heinous that they need to be punished with the ultimate sacrifice. And this leader was letting them go. He ordered his followers to cut him up, and he's like, get off my planet. And then the next thing you know, he's getting squashed. And I was like, wow. And it didn't seem that R2 felt that bad about it. You know, C-3PO was kind of embarrassed, but R2 was kind of like, eh.
Well, I found that just the falling on him gave an audible response for me, but it wasn't a laugh out loud. It was a damn, literally in like that kind of voice. It totally unexpected that they would go that route. And I'm with Jerry. The funniest thing about the entire episode is the fact that those guts stay on R2-D2 the entire rest of the episode. It's like, I mean, he's a droid. He's not going to think to clean himself off. And nobody's going to look at him and go, what is that that stinks so bad that's on the droid, man? But this
I'm cracking up thinking about it.
I could handle the like little munchkin people, even though it's like, wow, that's kind of lame to go that route. I guess they're referencing classic stories or whatever, but it is kind of lame. But what got me, though, was the poor, and poor is being charitable, dialogue that they gave to these little creatures. Granted, they are supposed to be kind of dumb and easily led. Maybe Hezu used the Force and it had a strong influence on his entire weak-minded species here, but we get dialogue like, we always do what he says, whatever he says, for our own good. He sends our children to fight his wars, the lucky ones. What does he do to the unlucky ones? I mean, there isn't worse dialogue than that anywhere, even in The Phantom Menace, of anything that I can think of that Lucas himself has written. I mean, holy crap. And all of a sudden, when Hezu is dead, without any cue, unless these characters, this entire species is perhaps telepathic and share each other's thoughts, without even one saying it to get them going, or like the crowd sort of starting to mumble to themselves and then getting caught up in a chant, they're all together in chorus saying, he's dead, he's dead, the big Hezu is dead.
That's because if they'd started singing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, there would have been copyright infringement.
I guess, but everything about the way that they handled the dialogue of the actual... I mean, not even Hezu. Hezu was... I mean, he's exaggerated. That was the whole point. You know, he's a cartoonish character. But the petites who were following him and the way that that was handled as in terms of the dialogue... Again, it's as if someone said, here's the story synopsis. These people... They always do what he says, whatever he says, for their own good, and he sends their children to fight his wars. Well, the lucky ones. They took that and said, well, let's just translate it and change the nouns there a little bit so it's first person, and there you go, that'll be our dialogue for the episode. Horribly, horribly written. Not like badly plotted, but the dialogue in and of itself, and the way that it was handled, it felt incredibly, incredibly paper thin, I guess is the word I'm looking for. Very cardboard, to make another paper reference for Jerry there.
Yeah, the fact that, you know, we see them actually kill a society's leader, even albeit accidental, their instant reaction, and I didn't think it was like, oh, it's completely implausible that they would all chant the same thing. I mean, it was probably obvious that this leader was so terrible that they all just respond that way. And that kind of makes you not feel so bad about R2 squishing them, because in a way, and they're the accidental heroes, they kind of liberated that planet. And now where I thought it went a little weird, you know, 3PO's just like, oh, great, now you're a democracy. Everything's going to be great now. And they walk off, you're just like, man, these guys don't have a chance because they're, you know, they couldn't even really vote on a leader properly. So I thought that was kind of an odd ending. It's like, okay, give me your, what was it, your most courageous, your nicest, and your most, I mean, I'm making these up, I don't remember what they were. And, you know, here's three characteristics that I see 3PO thinks important for democracy. And we're going to do a, you know, solid gold, you know, whatever type, just whoever gets the most applause is the next
solid
president.
Solid gold.
You know, I got to tell you, though, I like the way that they handled that. Actually, I mean, again, I'm a history teacher, and I like to see thematic stuff within the Star Wars films. So a couple things jumped out at me about that. One is, it's kind of interesting that C-3PO is essentially pulling an Athens here. I mean, he is echoing the idea from Plato that the smartest person should rule, the philosopher king, as Plato called it. And at the same time, he's calling for essentially everyone vote, and whoever gets the most votes, you're the leader, you're sort of drafted into that position. Very much like what you would say in Athens with the direct democracy they had, though not an exact parallel. But then what do we see? As soon as that starts happening, you see chaos starting to ensue, at least a tiny bit of chaos starting to ensue on this particular planet, which fits very nicely, although kind of creepily, with some of the stuff we've seen in the prequels, with things like how, in Anakin's mind, democracy doesn't work. Someone has to force people to agree. And, you know, if it works, do it. which was always one of the places where he and Padme disagreed on the idea of leadership. So in a sense, it's still carrying over one of those themes, albeit small, from the Star Wars films itself, and no pun with small there.
Wait, this wasn't a commentary on the U.S.'s Middle East policy? Go in, kill the leader, set up democracy, walk away, have fun with that? Sorry.
I took that, too. I took that. Are they really liberating these people? Because, you know, there's a lot of people who think that, you know, Saddam was kind of keeping Iran in control. So maybe we will get a story down the line when the planet closest to them is trying to take over these petites. Did they really do these people a favor by killing this guy? Those petites didn't seem like they were starving or anything like that. And there's a certain ideal, you know, people who think that, you know, some people need to be led, you know, because they can't lead themselves. And after C-3PO declares that this is a democracy, they immediately started fighting with each other. And then, like you said, Jerry, what do? Oh, it's time to go. And they just leave them there to fight amongst themselves.
No, Barrett, you said the biggest issue I had with this part, and once again, I love this episode. This was a lot of fun. But they are little people. So when R2 falls over and squishes the little person and then walks around with his guts on him during the entire episode, if like a starship had run over somebody and there was a big splotch of gore down the side, would they just leave that hanging on the entire episode? Or have we reduced Star Wars to... Or reduced the role of smaller people in Star Wars to that of just comic relief.
Peons. And not only that, but when they roll out, we have been introduced that R2-D2 is in full control of this Y-Wing. Why does he burn out on him? You know, why does he hover for a little bit, set the afterburners on him to blow him back? I mean, I could not think that R2-D2 did not do that on purpose. I thought he had to have done that on purpose.
If it was thrusters, it would have burned them. It was something else, I guess sublight or whatever, that doesn't emit fire. Otherwise, they would have been all torched. I always thought, though, and by always, of course, I mean in the last, 48 hours, it struck me that, you know, just the way that the clones put, you know, the wolf faces and stuff, you know, on their armor as a way of saying, yeah, check this out, or the bloody handprint or whatever. I figure, you know, that goop on R2 just shows that you shouldn't mess with them. Like, the goop on R2 is the equivalent of having a tattoo of a teardrop by your eye.
I knew where you were going with that. That is so wrong.
Or the equivalent, you're right, you may be right. It's a like a badge of honor, kind of like how in Rookies, when one of the rookies kills the beast and Captain Rex takes the blood and puts it on his chest, you know, it's kind of like a mark, a badge of honor, you know, for the blood.
So R2-D2 and 3PO's Y-Wing doesn't have enough power to get apparently very far at all, just to another planet, which is apparently a young planet.
This is planet Balnab, which I will refer to as the planet of the big dung balls or whatever those were. Somewhere there a fly is going, loss, loss.
So the droids land and they think that some six-armed monkey things may be the highest form of life. But lo and behold, R2-D2 and C-3PO are taken into custody by the true dominant species on the planet and taken before their leader, a big projection which 3PO recognizes as a hologram, and R2-D2, in his second role of something from The Wizard of Oz, plays the Toto role and goes and pulls back the curtain to show that the wizard is just, well, in this case, it's not a grumpy old man, it's a group of pit droids.
That's Albie Dewar is the name of the character. And I gotta say, initially, I was like, wow, that voice, really? Because it's incredibly nasally and annoying. But then when we realize that it's pit droids doing it, and we've heard pit droids, I'm not even sure if you ever heard pit droids talk in basic before, but even their little squiggly voice, it kind of has a kind of thing going on to it. It sort of made sense that if they were speaking through something that was then being broadcast out in a slightly modulated form to create this image of Albie Dewar, it kind of makes sense for him to have that nasally voice. What I don't get is how a hologram emitter or a crashed and apparently buried starship can cause lightning. How does that work exactly?
That was a little odd. We didn't see the great and powerful Oz smiting the people that came before him with strikes of electricity. I'm not really sure how one gets their holo projector to do that. It must be on the fritz.
You know, I have to say that until this point in the show, I did not get the Wizard of Oz reference. But as soon as I saw the hologram, I really, it just, a light bulb went on my head. I'm like, okay, this is not the real apparition. It's someone controlling him from behind the scenes. But more to the point, I really liked, I mean, I really liked the hillbilly fishing, hillbilly fisher people on here. Did they not sound like hillbillies in their accents when they talked?
If they had a droid, it would have went bling, 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 bling.
And that's great. I'm like, great. Finally, they're taking a shot at the hillbillies because, you know, they've already got the Africans. They got the Chinese. They got this. They got that. They're finally getting the hillbillies.
Equal opportunity offenders.
Race.
And of course, the hillbillies are on a backwater, not all the way developed planet.
With piles of dung, no less. You know, about this whole sequence, though, I got to say, like, this, the whole sequence on this planet. I mean, the whole thing with Albie Diwa, the pit droids and such, it goes by so fast. It's almost like, you know, blink and you'll miss it. The biggest purpose that it seems like as far as this part of the episode serves is to transition into how is it that we're going to get R2 and 3PO into the hands of the pirates so they can eventually wind up in space again to wind up back with our other heroes as we go along here. And it just seemed weird to me. I mean, they left one ship and made their, like, Adigalia ship, and they made their way to Petite Petuna, the Petunia planet, and then eventually made it to Dung World, to Balnab, and somehow, at this point, they're out of power? I mean, even if they didn't recharge through the entire previous mission, it's incredibly rare in Star Wars to actually see a droid ever run out of power, unless it's a power source coming from somewhere that someone has shut off in one form or another. It's incredibly convenient that those guys, those droids, wind up running out of power now after a relatively short amount of time. Moreover, C-3PO's last words when he runs out of power is, "I'll be joining you soon." And somehow when he reactivates, it's, "Would rescue us." Wait, "I will be joining you soon, would rescue us?" What? I couldn't even say it right. "I'll be joining you soon, would rescue us?" Where did that sentence come from? Unless somehow he was processing stuff when he supposedly was out of power. Are they in a power save mode? Is this like when my iPad sits out for more than a few minutes and the screen goes dark and I gotta unlock the thing? Or what? Just seemed like a very convenient plot device that we almost never see. Sure, droids must run out of power at some point, but to have it happen right then on screen when we usually haven't, it felt very contrived. Though a cool and somewhat touching moment between C-3PO and R2-D2, if we didn't know that they were obviously going to be saved somehow.
See, that's exactly what I liked about it, because I don't want to presume that I totally get the amount of time they've been separated from the ship. I mean, maybe they've been walking a while, maybe they've been flying a while. It's probably not been too terribly long to your point, though, because Adigalia is still just like in cuffs standing right next to General Grievous on the ship that invaded. So it's not going to be a long distance, but, you know, they got shocked with those the taser sticks or whatever you want to call them. They've been through a lot, and I actually thought the opposite of it in the sense that, hey, it's like, you know what? We've never seen that happen to R2 and 3PO before. That's kind of new and different for them. It just seems like they always have an unlimited amount of power, and any other time we've seen them, it's because they're always in Republic hands. I mean, they're not going to get to the point, you know, if they're on the Falcon in the movies, if they're with Padme in the prequels or in the Clone Wars or with Anakin, they're always connected to something. Here they're separated, so whether it seems like, hey, they only have a battery life of 36 hours and that's extremely unlikely, it still was, you know, convenient for the plot, but good to see. To me, I compare it to the, and this is actually, I'm not a fan of it just because we've seen it thousands of times, I guess, but it's like when the old Spider-Man series in the 90s, you know, Spider-Man swinging, he's about to get ready to just put the thumb down on the bad guy. He's like, oh, I ran out of web fluid. And then like 9 seconds later, he's just got put more web fluid in. It's just like, oh, that's such a convenience. It's just terrible writing. And, oh, I ran out of web fluid, now I'm going to get smacked around a little bit. So to me, it's comparable. But I like the fact just because we've never seen that happen to R2 and 3PO. And it was good, I think, just to kind of see them, you know, fall asleep like that or pass out together. It was just kind of fun because they're both going through the same turmoil in this situation. I mean, what's worse than happening to a droid in the middle of nowhere when they're trying to find their way if they completely run out of power? They could have, in theory, sat there forever.
And to further your point, and Nathan, you might have to correct me on this, but I don't think we've ever seen any droid run out of power, have we? I think this is the first time any droid has actually ran out of power. And I thought it was pretty cool. And it did give you that sense of dread that they could be stuck there forever because they did not put out a signal letting anybody know where they were. It was obviously nobody on this planet that they were on were smart enough to help them or even knew where they came from. So I was really thinking until the pirates showed up that how are they going to get off this planet? And I was kind of a little worried for R2 and C-3PO.
It's definitely a Lucasian thing, to use that term again. I mean, we don't see droids totally lose power very much. Again, not counting ones that are shut down by, you know, a signal being lost or something like that. But, you know, he's got C-3PO saying, you know, if you won't be needing me, I think I'll close down for a while. You know, he's got the shut off at Ben's place. You've got instances where, you know, when Anakin has to go in and turn on C-3PO and that sort of thing. So powering on and off droids, that's not necessarily something that is out of the realm of what Lucas does, and it's certainly done more in Lucas's stuff in a percentage sense than it is in any of the EU stuff. It's just one of the few times we've ever seen one actually run out of power or going to standby for lack of power. That's where it goes a little different. But definitely it fits with Lucas's way of using power consumption as a story point, even if only a minor one. Just weird from the grand scheme of Star Wars as it's developed since 76 with the novelization onward.
So 3PO and R2 are out of power and they're sitting there and they are found by some Weequay pirates who, as Nathan said, can't even be bothered to get full dialogue. And this is the part where the story stops being Wizard of Oz and starts being Gladiator because
Maximo.
They're found unconscious, taken aboard the pirate's ship, and then they're to be put in the droid gladiator ring. So I'm thinking this is how we're going to do the rest of the season. So I'd like to volunteer my services right now to write for season 5 of the Clone Wars because I've got some great mashups here. I think the Old Man and the Sea and Planet of the Apes for one story arc, the Metamorphosis and Toy Story for one story arc, Great Expectations and The Godfather for another story arc, and To Kill a Mockingbird into Free Willy for another story arc. So I've got the write-ups, Filoni, Lucas, if you guys want to give me a call, I think we should have some great stuff for next season. Just throwing that out there.
To use a Star Wars one for you, we do get some great stuff in there. I mean, we get K-0-5-D, which I guess is supposed to be K-O as opposed to K-0. K-0-K-O, the droid that fights under the name of Maximo aboard the pirate ship Marauder. Of course, none of those really get said in the episode stuff that showed up on the limited episode guide stuff over on StarWars.com. And there was some great build up there. I mean, I almost thought, holy crap, the droids really are going to have to fight this guy. And then out of left field, boom, blew a hole in the hull. Whee! And there's your comic book cover. It was like this whole build up had no payoff in a sense. I was really looking forward to seeing some droid butt kicking going on, but c'est la vie.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping, you know, we've seen some interesting issues of the old droids comic and droids revolting and fighting, you know. This could have been interesting instead of Asp droid with a flamethrower versus R2-D2 in a slap fight.
Wait, we could have seen R2 and 3PO kick some Asp. Thank you very much.
Yes. Not to be alone in the assumption categories. Now, when I saw these pirates, did anybody else assume that Hondo was going to show up? I mean, because they had thrown everything in the kitchen sink in this episode as well. So I figured Hondo was going to show up. You know,
well, the one guy stole his glasses, apparently.
I am very disappointed in you. Every Weequay is not a pirate.
They all look the same to me.
Not all the Weequays are part of the same pirate gang, at least.
Well, I figured it was Hondo. It kind of sounded like Hondo. And to your point, Nathan, of them not getting very many lines to say, I kind of assumed that that was part of their character, that they were kind of drunk, you know, being pirates.
It wasn't even that they didn't get a lot of lines to say. There's a point where they're on the ship, and I think it's like right after we see them get picked up and brought aboard the ship. They're literally like, like they're doing like the Weequay equivalent of a was it a Peanuts teacher? The wah, wah,
yeah,
wah,
Charlie
wah.
Brown's teacher.
There's no dialogue to what they're actually saying, and it doesn't even sound like he's humming a tune. It's just, it's like, well, I have nothing to say, and I'm dumb, so I'm going to walk around the ship and just kind of to myself.
That kind of goes to my point that they were drunk. You know, only a few, only drunk pirates would build this ring in their ship and have droids fight. You know, it kind of seemed like they were just, you know, drunk. And,
it reminds me of... I'm sorry.
So drunk weak ways begin construction projects, is what you're saying.
You know, that's what people do when they get drunk and they get inebriated and high. You know, they just start having little projects here and there that amuse them.
It just reminds me of, if you take a look at... I went back and watched a bunch of the old, on YouTube, a bunch of those old Jay Leno headlines things, because I was just bored and looking for something funny. And there's... a rather amusing one that, you know, sort of fits what you would expect when someone's laying out a design for a page on a newspaper or whatever, where it basically had a picture and underneath it just said blah, 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 blah. It was a placeholder thing where they just decided not to put a caption or forgot to put a caption in. And it kind of felt like that, like somewhere in the script, it was blah, 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 random noises from Weequay. And they were going to go back and fill in dialogue later, but somebody forgot. And the guy doing the Weequay dialogue just recorded it because he didn't know any better, and it winds up getting dropped into the show. It really didn't seem like it made a whole heck of a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, that's kind of almost how it struck me, too. But are we ready to get blasted out into space and somehow manage to get onto the Separatist ship?
The dopest part of the show.
Is that
when
what we're going to call it now?
R2 is the jetpack, you know, and C-3PO and then we have to get blasted out. That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. And then they land in the Separatist docking bay, and lo and behold, they're sent to get melted. And this is where I felt like, well, at the beginning of this whole pirate thing, this is where it kind of started jumping fast. I mean, they escape by getting sucked out of the side of this ship, and they get sent to be melted down for General Grievous's war machine. Who talks like that, really? A battle droid or not? And hey, all the other pirate droids are already there. Wait, what? How'd that happen?
It seems like it was not only something where they jumped very quickly as far as, oh, we only have a certain amount of story left that we can tell within this episode. It seems like they skipped over a few things within the process. I mean, first off, don't docking bays have shields? How did the droids get through it? Unless they happened to have just left them down. Recall that Anakin had to blast through those type of shields on the Invisible Hand for a very similar docking bay in order to let their ships, as they were crashing at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, actually land inside the ship. So, one, why were there no shields up? Even skipping past the idea of why on Earth were they traveling apparently at sublight and decided to just start taking pot shots at the pirate ship in the first place. Secondly, though, they're in the room to be melted down, and they're on that conveyor belt where they're just being, you know, boom, you're in and you're getting fried, which was kind of a horrific thing. You know, they use that in movies all the time where you get the person who's in a coffin moving into the incinerator for a cremation type of process. But okay, follow me on this because you may have to actually rewatch a chunk of the episode to see what I'm saying, but it's like they forgot a character existed in the process of making the scene. The droids are taken to be melted down. When we see them approaching the flames, there is an RA-7 droid, and another RA-7 droid, then a Gonk droid, and then would come R2 and 3PO. The front RA-7 freaks out and gets shot, falling onto the conveyor belt and then into the flames, while the other RA-7 and the Gonk droid remain on the conveyor belt. However, when the shot shifts to where the camera would basically be like right in the flames facing toward R2 and 3PO, and the RA-7 is running away, the other RA-7 just vanishes. Just gone. I mean, I'd say that the one running maybe just ran past the other one, hence the Gonk being the next one in line, but the blaster shot that then turns him around and knocks him down doesn't seem to throw him back past the other RA-7. They just seem to have forgotten the other RA-7 in the reverse angle shot completely. Like, by the end of this episode, like, eh, whatever, nobody's gonna notice. I did, and it had me scratching my head.
This whole last section struck me very akin to what we complained about in the final part of the Blue Shadow Virus. They had like 8 different things. They said, hey, this is cool. Let's do this. And they kind of tried to all do them. Maybe it was the intern summer program. They said, hey, who's got an idea? And you put them all in a hat. And like the last 3, they kind of pulled out and tried to put together in the last 10 minutes of this episode. I mean, would it? This would have been a whole lot less all over the freaking place. If, hey, that ship that's landing, oh, it happens to be a Republic cruiser with Wolf on it. And, oh, they didn't realize that Y-Wings automatically had a distress beacon when they were low on power. And, oh, I can't believe it's these two laying here unconscious. Of course, with it being Wolf, he probably would have just freaking left them.
Or maybe just cut out one of the two alien planets that they wound up on. You know, maybe they get stranded and run out of power on the first one or something. Or they don't go to the first one, instead they go straight to what we think of as the second one and they lost power. I mean, just take a little bit of the goofiness of those first couple of planets they're on, reduce it or pull one out, and you could have expanded the thing with Maximo, the droid, in the gladiator pit, and you could have expanded the end of the story and given us more action to go along with what we wind up seeing. It definitely felt like they were just rushing it along. And I gotta wonder, I mean, Wolf winds up showing up in this part. It seems like Wolf is showing up with Adigalia. Wolf got captured too? I mean, I never saw anything that to me indicated that Wolf got captured along with Adigalia. I mean, maybe it was just something that I missed along the way.
I thought Wolf was with Plo.
Well, see, that's the thing. I thought so too. And then I went and I looked at the scene and that's not the case. They show up to save the day, you know, they rescue Adigalia, yet another Jedi Council member who manages to get herself captured but not killed by Grievous, so she can later escape. But Wolf comes in, and this is kind of what got me scratching my head on it. Wolf, upon seeing the droid, says, "I can't believe it." And I think he means, I can't believe that one Jedi Master and six unnamed clone troopers just boarded a Separatist ship with General Grievous himself in command, and A, were only opposed by 8 regular battle droids, and B, somehow linked up with Adigalia, who miraculously escaped with 3 Wolf Pack members, including Wolf himself, who seems to have been captured. Perhaps Grievous fleeing is what allowed the ship to be boarded so easily. Maybe that allowed Adigalia to be free. He just, like, let her go and ran for the hills or whatever. But maybe Wolf and company weren't captured. Maybe they somehow got aboard the ship from a different direction and hooked up with Galia before hooking up with Plo and the other 6 clone troopers. But when you watch them running in, when you watch Plo and the clone troopers running in, none of those are Wolf. And when you see Adigalia running towards them, one of them appears to be Wolf. So either he got aboard a different way and helped free her, or he was one of the captives initially, which I guess would make sense if it was Adigalia's ship that was attacked in the first place and Wolf and them were aboard. But it almost sounds as though when he says, when we transfer the droids to Adigalia's ship, it sounds almost like they're saying that the droids were transferred to Adigalia's ship, but the Wolf Pack wasn't. But if that's the case, where is Wolf coming from in this scene when he winds up linking up? I mean, there's a moment where he steps up to Plo Koon, kind of from off to Plo Koon's, I guess, left and a little behind. And I had to go back and rewind and replay that scene a couple of times to figure out where was he walking towards Plo Koon even from, which got me to start going and counting the droids and trying to figure out where Wolf was through all this stuff. It's not clear at all, at least not to me.
Nathan, I can see your confusion, but I think it's just one of the things that you either had to give them a pass on this, you know, because they were trying to wrap up the story. Because when I heard that General Grievous escaped, I'm like, wow, they just kind of flew over the whole escaping of General Grievous. And you know, Jen had said in an earlier podcast that he's just the kind of the mustache twirling villain. And they are just keep reinforcing that. I mean, he's kind of having no impact. He catches the Jedi, doesn't do anything with her, kind of just keeps her on the bridge. No torture, no nothing. All he wants to do is play target practice with a pirate ship. And then he escapes and just abandons his ship. And I thought that was very interesting that they just kind of glossed over that. So it was kind of like you had to give him a gimme on that.
Well, more than that, though, General Grievous has escaped. Okay, there was one Separatist ship, and apparently he's escaping either in an escape pod or maybe in Solus One, his little personal starfighter or whatever. But he escaped. There were like 5 Venator-class Star Destroyers, plus a whole bunch of ARC 170s that they wound up sending out after that ship. How did he manage to escape when, aside from the big ship, it looks like he's the only one trying to get the heck out of there? It's another of those, okay, yeah, he escaped, we get that, but it would have been nice to see it. Again, you could have expanded this out had you shortened or removed some of the other earlier stuff. To have a cool little sequence in which somehow C-3PO and R2-D2 wind up aboard a Separatist ship and have their own peril where this rescue mission is going on in the background would have been cool. You didn't need the goofy planetary stuff in the middle. You could have come up with another way to get them aboard the Separatist ship. Maybe they could have even been captives themselves and somehow gotten lost. Like, they escape accidentally from the meltdown line and ta-da! just like they did, now they're running around the ship and we've got a whole different episode and a better episode happening.
So the droids are back with Commander Wolf, and it looks like he's going to get to hear, he's going to get to hear a new story after all, much to his chagrin. Yay for Commander Wolf. And hopefully we'll all get a new kind of story next week.
You know, it's right. Funny, I didn't like Wolf last week. I thought he came up as a huge jerk, unless they're going for that whole Imperial characterization at this point. But I was totally sympathizing with Wolf this time around. Because I got to tell you, I kind of agreed with him. You know, having seen the adventures the droids went through in this episode, I wouldn't want to hear all about it ever again either.
Now, I did not see a preview for next week.
Yeah, there's not one next week, which is a little weird. Usually what they do is it seems like they skip the weekend of Halloween because that's when trick-or-treating and stuff happens. But it's they're not. They're skipping the week before the weekend right before Halloween. And then the weekend right before Halloween is when that four-parter starts. I don't get the logic behind why this coming up Friday is the Friday that they leave out. I mean, unless they just didn't want to break up a four-part story into having one part and then a two-week gap in the next. I don't know, but yeah, there's no episode next week. There was a brief preview, not even on the end of the airing on Cartoon Network. It was a preview within the episode itself during one of the commercial breaks about this epic four-part story that's coming, but that was it.
I did not see that, but epic four-part story just brings back memories of the Ryloth arc, and that frightens me more than a little
Wait
bit.
Wait a minute. Aren't you forgetting the best epic four-part story that we saw that started off with Senate's landing at Point Rain?
I really thought you were going
with the movie, but that's even worse.
We've had some really great multi-part stories in this series. I mean, we had the Savage Opress arc. We've had quite a few pretty decent stories that have been multi-part and some great ones. Citadel was really quite good. It had a few moments where it sort of missed chances it could have taken, but it was fun. It was action-packed. And the way this sounds, the idea of Anakin giving up command of the 501st to go on some kind of mission that could end in disaster or whatever, sounds very promising. It sounds like we're finally going to dive into the real gritty warfare stuff starting next week.
That wasn't the preview that everybody was talking about since, what was it, Tuesday? Was it Tuesday that bomb first dropped, or was it Wednesday?
I believe it was at the end of the Savage Opress trilogy that the bomb was dropped, and when they announced the packaging for the toys for the year and how they're going to be tying stuff together for the upcoming 3D Phantom Menace. I mean, was there anybody who was really shocked or surprised by that other trailer?
You know, I am kind of with that thought of, wow, they're announcing Darth Maul's coming back, but it was pretty clear at the Savage Opress, and it seems like we were even flat out told by somebody somewhere, you know, even in the calendar year of 2010, that, yeah, that's part of the plan, that, you know, that there'll be a return here. In fact, I think a lot of us were wondering, hey, why didn't that wrap up last season? Why didn't something like that kick off this season? It makes sense, of course, with Phantom Menace coming out in February, and you're going to have a lot of tie-in stuff. I mean, New York Comic Con showed all sorts of, you know, cool episode one toys that are going to be released next year, some that actually haven't been out since 1999. So Lucasfilm in general, this is the full court press on everything that's episode one, and, you know, why wouldn't you milk this for it all the same?
Now, I understand why they're doing it around when they're doing it. I understand the episode one hype. I understand the need to build up. But I have a few issues with this. One, we are 6 episodes into season one. Are you saying that you know that the rest of the season is so bad you have to tell us what's going to happen at the end to keep us around? And also, along that line, I thought maybe they pulled this announcement out because they realized that there was such an upheaval about how bad these episodes were. Then you find out, oh, no, this was evidently planned all along because there's an old Navy tie-in. So they've known they were going to do this. So back again, do you know that the rest of this season is so bad that you have to tell us what's going to happen at the end? Because usually they'll give us a tease, and that's kind of like what wraps up the first half of the season. And then we get the season 0.5 preview before they break for Christmas. And, oh, look what's coming, look what's coming. And that would be the time I would have said, oh, that's when we're going to get the preview for Darth Maul. No, 5 episodes in, they're telling us what's going to happen at the very, well, I'm guessing it's the very end of the season. I mean, it's spring, so that's pretty much right there.
You know, Dan, it's possible that they don't have anything that's like truly epic. I mean, we know a couple of the storylines we're going to get. Mandalorians are going to show back up, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, there's nothing else to talk about when you've got Darth Maul coming back. And, you know, why are they really hyping this now versus, let's just say, maybe in December? I don't know, but it's fun. I mean, it's good to know what's coming. I mean, maybe the timing to your point is that, hey, we've got to remind people that there is some really cool things that are coming up. They just got to, you know, just kind of stick with us. You know, like, what do we say? This is the 72nd or 77th episode or, you know, somewhere they're at episode 70. So, you know, you're going to get duds. You know, you're going to get some maybe fun episodes like tonight, you know, the one we're talking about tonight. That's not really relevant to any of the higher order themes of Clone Wars. But, you know, we're going to do a few of these things because we've got interesting, funny ideas. We want to do a little homage to droids and maybe hopefully be done with it. And but, oh, by the way, Darth Maul's coming. Yep, you heard it. We said it, Darth Maul. I was making fun of the whole Greedo thing from last year in case that wasn't obvious.
I gotcha. That's funny. So it's also the timing thing. What would make more sense? To use the cartoon to get more people to go see the prequels in 3D, since this one has to be gangbusters or the other movies aren't going to make it? Or to try to get more people to watch your cartoon because of the hype of the movie?
I would argue that it's both directions. I mean, usually when you're talking to marketing people, a lot of times they're not so much talking about one thing to promote another, unless it's a small thing, you know, like Happy Meal toys or something. A lot of times it seems as though it's more about the cross promotion. You know, one promotes the other promotes the previous one. I mean, it's all about, you know, the multi-directional type of promotion going on. And I gotta say, I'm not sure that the timing says what people are kind of drawing conclusions about. I don't think it's so much the, well, this season is weak until the end, so we're gonna show you the end now, or anything like that, or that they're jumping the gun. We may not see Darth Maul for a while, but from the standpoint of Revelation, we didn't actually get to see much. Everything that's been revealed is stuff we pretty much assumed was happening before, but there really hasn't been a season-ending, holy crap, character return on the level of Maul. And I know people are going to pull out the, well, what about Chewbacca? Yeah, but Chewbacca was a one episode, or I guess, what was it? One episode, two episodes, I guess, character for last season. Padawan Lost, Wookiee Hunt, you get Chewbacca in there. But from the standpoint of what presumably they're going to be able to do with Maul, you'll probably see Maul more. They hinted at him last season, the last go around. And from a standpoint of Star Wars hype, and just the recognizability of characters, Maul has that sort of badassness to him, whether it's justified or not from a character standpoint, certainly from just the action-packed fighting standpoint, you know, whether it's the Darth Maul comics, the films themselves, or whatever. I think it's one of these things that we don't have anything to accurately compare this character return late in this season to. So maybe for something that is that momentous and that big of a shocker, like a holy whoa, wow, really? Announcing it way ahead of time makes more sense than if it was something that is wham, bam, wow, awesome in the context of the Clone Wars, but not necessarily something that is a wow for Star Wars in general. And on the note about the 3D films, Dan, I would be willing to bet money, though I won't because I'm not a gambling man, but I'd be willing to bet money or almost that not all six films are ever going to see 3D. I'm betting it won't make it past the prequels.
You know, on my comments about Maul returning, I would put Darth Maul returning with the wow factor on par with the Emperor returning in the novels. Because when I remember reading Dark Empire way back when I was just a young man, and knowing that the Emperor was coming back to cause more trouble for Luke was like, whoa, I thought the Emperor was dead, you know, and I could not wait to get more Emperor, to hear more stories. How did he come back? You know, how did he survive? How is he going to do this? He's got to be smarter and stronger now that he's back, and he's not going to make the same mistakes. You know, how are the good guys going to defeat him again? And I got the same feeling when I saw that preview for Maul coming back. You know, it put the same amount of impact on me. You know, he's a Sith Lord, and he's not going to be as stupid. You're not going to be able to jump over him and slice him in half again to defeat him. You're going to have to really, really outsmart this guy. You know, he's not going down again like a chump. And it just opens a whole new array of storytelling that you could tell. You know, where has he been? Has he got a Sith apprentice, you know, for himself? You know, will it just not be his brother that he's going to train? Who else? What else has he been doing in this time? You know, there's going to be some of the naysayers, like he got cut in half. You know, how could you survive? But you did hear Sidious say, and they did say that in the preview, you know, in the little reading of when they announced Maul back, that Sidious tells Anakin that some of the things they do are considered unnatural. And if Darth Maul was Darth Sidious's apprentice, he may have learned some of the ways to keep himself alive. In the book, Nathan, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am this time. In the book, The Rise of Darth Vader, there is a piece in that book where Darth Vader is sitting in his hyperbolic chamber and he's trying to regenerate himself. And he's able to do that. He's so powerful, he's starting to regenerate himself. And then when he sees that it's working, he starts getting happy, and then it stops working. And he realizes that in order for him to be able to regenerate himself, he has to keep his anger. So he will always be stuck in that body. So it is not, they've already set a precedent that the Sith do have the power to cheat death. So I'm thinking that we're going to find out more about this, and it's going to be really exciting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've even got the Darth Plagueis novel that's coming soon that gives us more background on it. And it was something that they were trying to do a while back, decided to can the project, and then they resumed it again, presumably based on new information. Perhaps it maybe came through Lucasfilm. Maybe it's something where they just sort of felt the time was right now, that because the Clone Wars is out there keeping the interest up. But for whatever reason, the Darth Plagueis novel that was dumped is now back with some changes from the original concept and will be coming out very soon. In fact, the advanced reader copies have already gone out to some folks. I know some folks who have now read that book, though they don't want to share spoilers, of course, because you do that, you're not going to get an advanced reader copy again. I will say, though, the idea of Maul coming back, there's a lot of naysayers out there saying, well, if it's cut in half, man, how could he come back? We haven't seen or heard from him, man. How could he possibly come back? Well, he's come back a couple of times, just in different forms. You know, you got the idea that parts of him may have been kept alive in one Tales story. You got the dark side sort of quasi-clone doppelganger kind of thing created by the prophets of the dark side back in another Tales story called Resurrection, which is also made into one of the first Star Wars fan audio dramas, by the way, by Ted Alderman. I think it was Brian Henry who was the guy behind that, those two. But even if, you know, we're thinking about him coming back as, oh, well, he can't come back. A, he's done it before. And B, of all the different returns, this is the one that would have the least continuity impact because he was presumed dead. This isn't like Greedo showing up and all of a sudden Greedo is much older than he was. And here's this story about Greedo that's just gone. Here he can come back. And we don't know what he's been doing because the continuity, even from the standpoint of the spinoff materials, the licensed materials, it's been mum on the subject because they presumed the guy was dead. What I want to know is, are we going to get a scene that's kind of like what we got with the Revenge of the Sith stuff, or even the deleted scene from Revenge of the Sith, how Qui-Gon supposedly figures out how to keep his essence and is able to use that to teach that to Obi-Wan while he is communing with the Force, and the same thing goes for Yoda being able to learn that so that when they die, they vanish like Qui-Gon wasn't able to, and that starts that line of Jedi vanishing. What I want to know is there essentially a skill that Darth Maul learned about falling down a reactor shaft and still being able to survive, given the fact that that's exactly what happens to Palpatine at the end of Return of the Jedi?
And let's not forget the fact that any child who sees Darth Maul on a poster, okay, who does not know Star Wars, does not know Luke from Anakin, if you see Darth Maul on a poster, that's going to get butts in that seat.
Well, I'm not arguing that. Not at all. I mean, on all actuality, I'm excited about it because, you know, I mean, it's freaking Maul. I mean, this, like Nathan said, this is the biggest what the heck, this is going to be awesome moment that they've ever pulled. I mean, the only way they could compare it would be to do a series based in the Legacy era. And hey, Chewbacca, he's not dead after all, after a moon fell on him. I mean, Maul's not dead after being chopped in half. And everybody's playing with this. I mean, the promo ads for Old Navy are, you only know half the story. Very funny. Haha. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this all goes. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, if we had Jen on the line, she could tell us the scientific view, but lightsaber, if it cuts you in half, it would cauterize the wound. And me being an EMT, your heart still beats. You know, it'll still pump blood through the veins and get it to your brain and stuff like that. So it's not that uncommon for someone, you know, there's been stories where people get kind of ran over in half and they're still alive for a pretty long time because your heart still beats. You still get blood to your brain. You can still breathe. You know, your lower half technically is not what keeps you alive. You know, there's people who, you know, don't have any legs, don't have any limbs. You know, they might have to have like a, you know, help to get rid of their waste. But a lower half of your body is not, doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily need a lower half of your body to work that well.
It'll be interesting to see which route they go. If they go the Mecha Mall that everybody's talking about, that was in that Tales.
Oh, I hope they do. I hope they do.
Visionaries was where that was. That was one of the ones. It's an unusual one because it was made by some of the people who were working on the film team as opposed to people who are generally considered EU authors for that one. But, you know, what I wonder about is, from the standpoint of how they're going to play this, in what direction would Lucas want to take it? Because you mentioned the Mecha Mall thing. At some point, you got to wonder if one of the ideas that found its way into Visionaries, because it was based on film staff stuff, maybe this was an idea that was floated by Lucas at one point. I mean, his horns are longer, apparently, in that preview, just like they're longer in that Visionary story. I think it's called Old Wounds or something like that. It's not too far-fetched to assume that it might turn out that way. It probably won't, but it could. I think this should be interesting to see. And certainly Maul should come back with a lot more wisdom than he had in the first place and be a much more formidable opponent strategically as opposed to just in terms of fighting prowess. Because as he's falling down there, you got to figure that, you know, he's doing that whole thinking back and having flashbacks and going through his life story and everything. He's pulling a robot chicken Emperor falling down the shaft thing. I'm cut in half. How did I possibly get to here?
What's the greater evil? If they do Mecha Mall or if they go the route of Dark Forces 2 and he flies around
with
and
Maul?
He's only kept alive by his hate.
Or we could do the...
That dude's name was Maul, wasn't it?
I think it was Maul. I'd have to go back and look. But no, I was thinking more Impata Jayos brand from, again, the Dark Empire storylines, you know, with the return of the Emperor at the time. I mean, there is precedent for characters essentially floating around with half their body gone. And in fact, I think in one of the promotional bits about it, I mean, maybe it was with that original, I guess it was EW website update on this that gave us that exclusive trailer. They do make mention of Brand, I believe. Or was it the one from Jedi Knight? Because it was Dark Forces 2, Jedi Knight was the one that had that character in it. They made reference to one or both of those in one of the write-ups.
Did they? Cool. It'll be interesting to see. I think we'll have to start a pool or something. Who do you think is going to get to actually kill Darth Maul? Will it be Anakin, Obi-Wan, Ahsoka? Or will it be like Savage or somebody?
I think it's going to be that C-3PO is going to pat R2 on the back and he's just going to fall on him.
It's got to be Obi-Wan. They can't take away Obi-Wan being the Sith Destroyer. It's got to be Obi-Wan, I think, is going to have to take him out. That's my vote.
But if you go back and listen to Revenge of the Sith, when referring to, you can't face him, he's a Sith Lord. Obi-Wan doesn't say Sith Lords are my speciality. He says our speciality. So maybe we're going to have a reason for Anakin to be considered a Sith killer here, as opposed to someone who got his butt kicked by Dooku repeatedly.
You know, I would not be in the least bit surprised if we had just a full normal head-to-toe Maul. Whatever, however they could possibly explain that. I don't see Mecha Maul coming. I don't see them pulling that out. That said, I kind of felt like that this Maul was animated kind of weird, to where it's, you know, I mean, it's kind of Maul. It's kind of not really. It'll be kind of interesting to see if maybe there is something going on here that maybe even within the storyline, no, it's not really Maul. It's someone who is, I don't know what, kind of Jodo casting his way through being Darth Maul. Maybe one of the other, you know, folks that we saw from the Night Sister. Granted, I think that maybe they're all yellow, but I don't know. I just get the feeling there's a twist here, and I don't know what it is. But it's certainly, I mean, if nothing else, how they wrap it up, who's going to kill him, will he actually be murder killed again, you know, for sure, or will he just kind of go into the background, into the archives where they could pull him up again for anything else? I mean, it'll be definitely an interesting way to build on the episode one hype. Now, I kind of wonder if they're saying spring, 2012, spring, the seasons usually end up in May. Are we going to see this right on the heels? I mean, I would think if you do this any time outside of February when the movie gets released, you're missing an opportunity. You can't have Maul showing up in April. I think there's too much of a separation there. So no doubt we'll probably know tons more around Christmas time, but it'll be interesting to see what they do.
When I spoke to Filoni off the record, right, and he said that, I asked him about, is he officially breaking the rule of two by having all of these Sith Darksiders or the dark Jedi, dark Force users? And he basically said that you are not a Sith apprentice until a Sith Lord says you're a Sith apprentice. You can use the dark side all you want, but you're not one until you are dubbed one. So Darth Maul was a Sith apprentice. So he has been demoted. So how, that is another thing that they're going to have to come to grips with or make right, because Darth Maul should be just as powerful. He should be just as deadly, how is that going to, is he going to be able to confront Sidious? Is he just a dark force user now and not a Sith apprentice? So there is many, many things that they're going to have to get right to make people happy. And I hope they do.
Oh, man. I'm glad now that those tattoos now come from Dathomir, from being a Knight Brother rather than being a Sith. Because if he's not considered a Sith anymore because he's been off the scene for so long, wouldn't it suck to have a scene where it's kind of like Luke building the new lightsaber from Return of the Jedi, and instead, Maul is in there sandpapering down his skin to get rid of the tattoos?
Well, this has been a fun discussion of this week's episode of Droids and the announcement of Darth Maul.
Did you mean to say droids?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I'm playing this one as totally a droids episode.
Awesome.
And the only thing that would make that more definite would have been Mungo Baobab, or if the droid that didn't want to go in the incinerator had taken off his helmet and had been the long lost prince. So. Yes, this was definitely an episode of droids.
Hey, guys, there's still an opportunity here. I mean, for us to see the origins of the Great Heap. I mean, it could still happen. Keep your fingers crossed.
Shut up. I want to thank Nathan and Jerry for coming back to stay on this topic with me. And I want to thank Barrett for stepping in for Jen, finally giving her a night off.
You're welcome, Rockstar. Anything for you, my friend.
That's right. And we will see you all back in 2 weeks, and hopefully we will see some, some Clone Wars on this show. It'll be a good time. We'll see you all then.
See you.
Take it easy.
Later, everybody. Sorry I thought it stunk. I'm looking forward to the next arc, though.
Somebody check the temperature of Mustafar, please, because I don't think Nathan and I agree on the next episode is going to come anytime soon.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
And I'd like to thank them for giving us two episodes so my awesome new intro can be used twice. But really?
If for no other reason, you've That's got right. that going for you.
Absolutely. Trouble again. Very true. All right. Anybody else about the dogfight, or are we ready to land on the planet and meet Jesus? Or hey, Zoo. Who the heck is singing Outkast?
I'm sorry.
Somewhere in New Zealand, Reverend Strone's head is exploding.
That's not even going to be in.
Hey, it's not even going to go in the outtakes, man. What's wrong?
I gave you 4.5 minutes singing in the outtakes last time. You don't get to sing in the outtakes for like a month.
That's true. That's true. I'm going to count it on the calendar now.
Trouble again. Echo, the only one that's still alive.
You know you're going to cut that out anyway, so it doesn't matter. I just tried to stop while I was killing myself.
Baron, we would like to encourage you to stop while you're killing yourself. Just, you know, it's so hard to find good replacements nowadays.
I know Jerry's so relieved he doesn't have to edit me anymore.
It's all on me now.
But you want some more historical parallels? We could throw in the fact that, you know, once one leader's dead, the democracy doesn't work. Really. It fits in with Ahsoka, though, because Ahsoka's taken from India, and when Ahsoka, or Ashoka, in the Mauryan Empire died, his empire started to fall apart, kind of like this man. We're Alexander, another Greek parallel. Trouble again.
We're going to go to the Emerald City now.
The Emerald City?
The Emerald City.
The Emerald City Bank.
The Emerald Citadel, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Trouble again. They are. I'm trying to stall. Why? Nope. They're just called ball nabs or bow nabs or
ball nabs.
They're just called assholes.
I didn't say that.
That totally explains what we're seeing. They're not dung balls after all. Trouble
again. There is another race on the planet. A band of bow nabs.
I'm sorry, I'm beating myself.
Mute, boy.
All I can hear is asshole now.
So trouble again. You know, I didn't really think about it that deeply before, but now that you mention it, yes, they wow.
I try to see the racism in all things, Rockstar.
Please do not listen to the song last episode, please. Trouble again. To use a Star Wars phrase for you, you assume too much. You're assuming there's going to be a season 5 after season 4 is over with. That assumes that things really do pick up. I mean, we're on episode 72 when Lucas was saying about 100, so we're nearing the mark that he had set for himself anyway, and certainly it seems like this season's been sort of just kind of tottering along. But trouble again. Yeah, and you forget, Barrent, I only listen to the outtakes anyway, or at least that's what I'm accused of.
Yes, we know. Jerry, did you fall asleep? Trouble again.
Well, I think you have a point, Dan. It is possible. I think you have a point there, Dan. It is possible that there is nothing else epic. Okay, do you want me to keep repeat everything while somebody sniffs?
Sorry, that was me. I thought I had muted. I'm sorry.
Clearly you did. That's why I repeated that one line. But then you kept sniffing. I had Dan in the studio doing some lines.
You got some weak way pirates over there, Dan?
Yeah. No, he's got Liam Neeson in there doing some lines. Let me start that over. Trouble
again. Jerry, I think we're kind of stomping over you like we usually do, Jen. What are your thoughts? Trouble
again. Maybe it's going to be a sequel to Brain Invaders, and it's not really him. It's like a little weird larvae thing inside his head, man.
Maybe Ahsoka. maybe Maul's the one who kills Ahsoka. You know, you never know. I mean, he killed Qui-Gon.
Maybe
you
it's know, really it could, just it a, like anything. A maybe it's a dark side illusion. And Ahsoka is Darth Maul, right? You have your big moment of a, no, Sky Guy, I am Darth Maul. That's not true. That's improbable. Trouble
again. You know, this is the last thing I'm going to say about Darth Maul.
I sincerely doubt it.
Trouble again. I think we got something there with the Jen. I think we could trademark that or something. The Jen. T-shirts. Don't cross the gen. Trouble again.